Act 250 standard for suicide six is 55 decibel in areas of frequent human contact. So as of right now, the permit that suicide six must abide by is actually stricter. It is stricter than anything we're talking about right now. So suicide six cannot produce sounds that are audible at a level higher than 55 decibel anywhere outside of human frequent human activity. So that one is one point I want to clarify. The reason, so this, what I'm saying right now has been discussed with this board during, what I'm about to say has all been discussed in great detail, and I appreciate all the work that the Planning Commission has done. I think, and just to maybe find a path forward on this so that we can alleviate some of the tension, and maybe John's motion is the best motion, so that maybe we can all get on the same page together. Because the Planning Commission has done a ton of work, and I personally want to respect that work. But the Select Board has also done a lot of work. And I think there needs to be reciprocal respect of the work that the Select Board has done. And a lot of work went into the sound provision that this board approved twice. It approved it once within a settlement agreement, and it approved it a second time just a few weeks ago. And a lot of work went into coming up with that sound provision. So it wasn't like, hey, let's cobble something together. So I want to say that. The other thing is that, you know, I can share it with everybody, but basically I consulted with RSG, and there was reference earlier. The letter that Bill read is not consistent with, to put it kindly, with what RSG said yesterday. And so I will read what RSG said yesterday. I appreciate you reaching out to Ryan. So there were two gentlemen involved with RSG. One was named Isaac Old, with whom John Moore spoke, and another gentleman named Ryan Hack. And he is another sound consultant. Those two gentlemen reviewed the sound provision that this board approved. And Isaac responded yesterday. I should start off by saying that the provision as drafted is clear, relatively clear, and will be relatively enforceable, particularly compared to many other sound limits in other towns. So right off the bat, he clarified that the sound provision that we approved as a board and replaced in the zoning ordinance is clear, is enforceable. There is not an issue there. I want to say, and I don't know if folks agree with this, that the issue here is, basically RSG's response was that there's no problem, there's no fundamental problem with the sound provision that was approved. Any sound provision, whether it's a clean 70 decibel or something more complicated, is going to cost money to enforce. You're going to have to hire a consultant, and you're going to have to pay that consultant to do a sound study. It doesn't matter how simple your sound ordinance is. So that's another point that needs to be clarified. And just on that, a lot of towns actually shift the cost for the property owners to say, you need to prove that you're not violating the sound provision. So we could easily go back to a property owner and say, you know what? We as a town aren't going to pay for it. You're going to pay for it. And that's completely within bounds. But the point here is that the way that the provision is drafted is not inherently flawed. There's nothing that causes it to cost more money. Any sound provision costs money to enforce. So that's the other point. And so I think that, and lastly, I will say, I would be, as an individual board member, very troubled if this board tonight approved a sound standard within the settlement agreement that is different from one that is put into the zoning regulations. Because we made a promise. This is, we represent the town, and on behalf of the town, we made a promise to a property owner that in the undercurrent of a settlement agreement, that that property owner would not be subject to a different standard than everybody else. That whatever standard, whatever noise standard that we agreed to in the settlement would be the one that everybody would have to abide by. And that is a matter of fairness, right? No property owner should be subject to a different standard. And, you know, Act 250 is the exception to the rule because we don't own that. But otherwise, no property owner should be subject to a different standard. And so that was the promise we made. And I guess I'm fine with striking the provision altogether and then maybe coming together as a planning commission and select board and say, can we get on the same page?
The reason why I don't have a problem with having the difference between the settlement agreement that we reached and another level or not having one is because of who we're affecting and the reason why we had a settlement agreement and how that was reached. If it was truly a promise, you know, it should have been in the agreement to start with. Because we've been down this road with other things within that agreement. And B, it was because they technically couldn't do what they wanted to do there is why we ended up with the settlement agreement. And that was a way to get them to be able to have what they wanted as well as to appease the neighbors. We'd have to do what's best for the majority of people, not just make everybody adhere to something because we told one person that this is what we were going to do. So I personally have zero issue with that. So,
but I think you're forgetting, John, that we, Frank and I, and together as a board, worked hard to craft not something that was specific to one landowner, but something that we intentionally spent several months negotiating, working on a sound provision, back and forth, lots of legal review, sound RSG reviewed it. There was a lot of work that went into coming up with a provision that was not just for one property owner, but that everybody, that we thought as a board, everybody could live with. And so I think you're forgetting that we had many months of discussions where we were driving toward a provision that we as a board believe everybody in Pomfret could live with. And I do think that, I'm one board member and I can't change history, but I do feel that it's important that we made a promise.
Well, you made a promise, but you made a promise to one business and one individual, or however you want to call it. That promise, really, I don't believe you have the right to force that on the rest of the town as a zoning bylaw, to include that, a promise that would be included in a zoning bylaw.
Why don't we?
Because we don't write the zoning bylaws.
But we are the authority that approves and
But the zoning bylaw was in being written, and it hadn't been put in. It hasn't been put in. So you can't make promises to someone in our town before a zoning bylaw has been approved.
Why?
What gives you that right?
If you were doing this for months, why weren't we consulted? The other thing is, you're presenting something to the whole town, and the town has not had any hearsay on it to comprehend either way, as we have to do for a hearing when we do our board. So, I think you're overstepping your bounds.
I'm not individually overstepping anything.
You guys are overstepping.
Right, and I just want to speak to that for a moment. I acknowledge everything you're saying, Nelson. And I can't make excuses for it, but for better or for worse, we were in confidential negotiations with a party. Could we have gotten in executive session, pulled the planning commission in, and said, hey, by the way, this is the direction we're going. Are you guys on board with that? We could have done that.
And
Well, it backfired.
Either I wasn't paying attention fully during all of these discussions, or it wasn't made crystal clear to me. But I was never under the impression that we were adopting that ordinance for the entire town when we were going through this. So,
well,
maybe that's my fault.
I don't know
entirely. Maybe it's shared.
But Scott, they're in agreement with you. The Purple Crayon people, the artistry, and all that. They're in agreement that this is a sound regulation that they can deal with. I mean, that you've asked them to comply with.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Are they happy? Okay, so that means that they're happy. But the rest of the town, we feel, is not going to be happy.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
How
it's
do you
not
know
going
that?
To be happy.
How do you
because
know?
We just I've lived in this town a long time.
Yeah. And what is it that
and everybody else on the Planning Commission has too. And we gave it a lot of thought. We just didn't sit down and say, what do you think we ought to do for the sound ordinance at the town hall or the town garage or Suicide 6 or Cloudland Farm or Moore's Orchard or
right.
whatever you want to. If you want to spot zone, go right ahead. But it ain't going to work.
So,
as a Pompa resident, I'm happy to tell you what's wrong with this plan from a residential standpoint, not just the general manager of Suicide 6.
Yeah.
While you were talking, I have one of those multi-$1,000 sound meters,
right.
and you exceeded 65 decibels almost the whole time you spoke.
Uh-huh.
As you can see, I'm speaking right now, and I'm at 73.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly not shouting, although sometimes I want to.
Yeah.
So, 45 decibels, spring peepers are 60 to 65 decibels.
Yeah,
this is ludicrous. You couldn't have a plow truck, you couldn't snowblow your driveway, you couldn't mow your lawn, you couldn't start your tractor to go take care of your herd. This is insanity.
Well, so again, I will just
and
say,
I'm not allowed to talk at this level.
So I think what he's saying is we need to sit down and talk this through before we even do anything else.
It's fine, but I just want to make the point that it's not ludicrous, because these standards are, if you look at other town ordinances, you'll
see. I'm well familiar with the Woodstock standards. I help enforce it. That's how I have the equipment.
Okay.
It's 70 decibels, not 45.
And Suicide 6 is 55 outside the property line. So,
yeah.
It's not ludicrous.
He probably would agree with it. It's just not fair at this point to go ahead and put these numbers down without giving it a lot of thought. We did. We
yeah,
didn't come
so,
up with anything. We finally threw something in that was Woodstock. We felt, okay,
right.
We'll do that because that'll make everybody... If someone's going to come along and say, you didn't put a sound ordinance in, okay,
sure.
Okay. So
well,
we did.
So I guess we're talking a lot, but I just want to go back to saying that I think John is proposing a solution that
right.
creates an opportunity for us to talk.
Exactly. I think that's what we need to do.
So maybe that's the path forward.
Yeah, because you've got a lot of good points. We have points. I mean, we just need to figure out which ones are going to work for the town overall.
Can I just say something quickly? If you measure your voice where you're sitting, it's not a real measurement of, excuse me, of what somebody hears somewhere else. I mean, you're the source.
Right.
I know, but it's really kind of a red herring. You're the source of the noise. And the measurement is at a property line, or scientifically, sound is measured from the source to the recipient. So when you say something like you said, you've got the source, but you don't have the recipient. So
no,
so,
but I'm the recipient here, and I'm just illustrating.
Well, I understand,
but
you're
is.
Speaking at that decibels where you're sitting.
Oh, question.
Way over there is
yes.
not going to be 70.
Sure, but when you're
okay.
plowing your driveway,
that's,
or your plow person is plowing your driveway, and that comes to
okay.
the roadway or the property.
All right.
Fair enough. But my point would be,
wait
a minute.
Please, rather than argue with Tim.
Yes.
Just tell us what you want to
okay.
say.
Okay. Well, that's all I wanted to say, because I thought that was misleading, to say this is 70 and this is what you're talking about. It's ludicrous. It really isn't, because
distance,
that's not a real measurement.
Yeah, distance does attenuate the noise level. So.
Did you want to say something?
I just got a question. I'm just trying to, I'm trying to figure out, you know, which way to vote. And I guess my question is, if we... John's motion, and correct me if I'm wrong, is to not have a sound ordinance in the proposed coming up zoning
bylaws.
John, is that the motion to have none?
Yeah, and then they continue to work on it.
Because I guess I just worry then.
Do we have one now? And this has been an...
We have a sentence basically in the draft bylaw.
Right, but I guess what I'm saying is
it's
that...
Not in effect. Well, yes, it is in effect.
What's
until.
It's in effect.
Right, but our old zoning bylaws...
No, the 75?
Was there any...
No cannon shall be fired on Sunday is probably the only thing in there.
And have we had an enormous amount of issues in town?
No!
So...
I know.
What are we doing?
I know, but we need to visit that.
Well,
no, I'm not saying it shouldn't be visited.
Right.
But
you're right.
Okay, so let me get my question out. My question is if we have no ordinance, then are we subject to getting back into another litigation? Because I guess what I'm getting at is that the ZBA said that Purple Crayon was creating a public nuisance by making a lot of racket. I mean, that's what this is what precipitated this whole thing.
One person said that, I believe.
ZBA got called in because they did not have a permit to have music in the cast house barn.
They did.
That's how ZBA got involved.
Okay.
Not that they were necessarily creating a hazard or obnoxious behavior, but that they were doing something that they were not permitted, that their permit that they had received from the ZBA had not given them permission to do.
So I guess what I'm getting.
So what I'm saying is, I don't mean to interrupt, but that isn't because they were making music was only a problem because they had no permit to do that there.
In that building.
Particular building.
Well, but the noise is what precipitated the whole thing.
Yes,
but
they
that's
had no permit.
Yeah,
they,
no, I understand.
That was the...
Very, so I guess what my question is, what are the ramifications for having no sound ordinance at all?
Well, you've lived in this town for how many years?
Well, we do have. Because we've got Woodstock 70 decibels.
Well, just temporarily, but he's saying...
It's in the draft.
But it'll be struck. Right.
But it'll be struck.
It'll be struck, of course.
So I'm just wondering...
Until we develop a new standard, if at all, whatever.
So I guess as an interim, I would suggest that we you know, and I'm only discussing, I'm not making a motion. I just think that maybe we should keep something in there. Because one of the problems is... say somebody wants to have a shooting episode. I don't mean it in a bad way. I probably is not, but I'm trying to think of something that creates a loud noise.
As long as you're average, and as long as you're firing less often than you're not, then
I'm going to talk to Spencer.
You're
Schwein.
Okay anyway. So if you're firing,
come on. I mean,
well,
you know, boys
as long
will be boys.
If your 1 hour average is under the 70, then it can be. Is loud anyway, so then that creates a whole other
problem. Well, unless you have instantaneous. So I guess the question is, my question is, what's the ramification? It sounds like perhaps, at least for now, because you know darn well we're going to talk about this, and this will not get raised again for several years till we run into this again.
Well, maybe,
and so maybe we just keep the 70. Let's be realistic. We're not going to tackle this tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. And talk to John. He's the guy with a motion. If he wants to re-amend it or pull it and say that, fine. But
it's only a suggestion.
If he accepts that amendment, we can do that.
Well, that's a different motion.
It's a different motion altogether. You just pull your motion. And
I'd like to see mine through, if it gets voted down, and we can make a new one. But.
Can I make another point? If you're talking about industrial, and that's been proposed all through the town, and you're not going to have a sound ordinance, that's kind of...
I'm going to offer another motion after this, maybe it's better to call a question.
Never mind. I mean, but that I just wanted to make that point.
Conditional.
That's kind of crazy.
We'll go in front of the ZBA petitions.
Do you... First of all, did John's motion get a second?
It did.
Steve did.
Okay. And do we want to vote on John's motion at this particular time?
Sure.
All those in favor of John's motion, as I understand it, is to have no sound ordinance or reference to decibels at all in the draft zoning ordinance.
Yeah.
Which would mean nothing would be there. So, is that our understanding? Am I understanding that correctly? All those in favor of John's motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. I would like to offer a motion that the board appoint two people to collaborate with the Planning Commission to develop a sound ordinance.
A bylaw
that we can all live with.
Because an ordinance is separate from the bylaw.
It's part of the ordinance, but yes, bylaw.
I would like to see those people, at least one of those people, be somebody from this community, that this one person from either side from the community that this ordinance would affect.
Either side, and would it philosophically or geographically?
Yeah,
philosophically.
Okay.
You want to buy that vote?
I'm a little unclear as to, do you want one person from the zoning, the planning commission, and one person from the select board, or do you want one person from each of those, and then two individuals from the public at large?
I would like to see people from the public at large. I'd like to see somebody like Suicide Six, although maybe not Suicide Six, because apparently this has nothing to do with them, but somebody in industry that this will affect.
I would suggest that the Planning Commission tackle this, along with whomever you feel is would be a good addition. The Planning Commission's done all this stuff in the past. And if you can get someone from the... But also, I would warn, make sure that it's warned, and we're warned well, that people understand that the Planning Commission and the other outside people are working on this, so that people like Suicide Six and whoever else wants can come and weigh in, because that's just as important as being on that committee.
So if you're willing, Scott, before we tackle that motion, as I understand this, this is not going to be associated with the zoning regulations that we may or may not have we will have a second hearing on and adopt sometime, hopefully, in the near future.
I don't think it should hold it up.
This is going to be an amendment.
So what you're talking about is a separate bylaw, perhaps.
An amendment or a standalone town ordinance? I mean,
there are two things.
Okay, then, so here's what I would like to do to resolve confusion here is just set yours aside for the moment so that we can get an agreement on the zoning bylaw that we're trying to get agreement on to set a second hearing for. Mm-hmm. Can we deal with the industrial thing and then go to your motion? Is that okay?
Yeah, good call. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so now I need a motion to either accept or reject the two changes that the Planning Commission made regarding the heavy industrial use in South Concord, and industrial, not home-based.
One we agreed, right.
Okay, so we will ratify those changes that they have made if we so desire. So I'm looking for a motion to deal with those changes.
So
can we, I would recommend that we state the motion in very clear terms.
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't agree with you.
And that the motion be stated, and I'm suggesting a motion, I'm not afraid, but that the motion needs to say something to the effect that we are allowing light industrial uses in the rural district.
Correct.
Is that correct?
So
And we would be replacing industrial with heavy industrial on the list of prohibited uses in the South Conference district. We're not saying that we're allowing anything. We're just saying it's a permitted use. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So what we had was that we had heavy industrial was not allowed. So now we want to replace that with industrial uses on a list of prohibited uses in South Concord. Okay.
So the motion would then, for that part, would have to read, you're replacing heavy industrial with industrial uses are prohibited in the village area.
And the amendment would make light industrial a conditional use.
In the entire town.
In the rural area. In the village district. light industrial in the
business district. That motion already. Did we do it in bulk? I think we did it in bulk.
We support this amendment. This is your amendment.
Right. I'm just thinking back to when we did it. We did it as one block, right? One block of changes. We didn't.
Well, I think it's quite important that even if we've done it, we want to be sure that we exactly know.
Right. That according to Scott.
So that we get this done correctly.
No.
We're all on board.
No, we voted.
No, but you wanted to go one at a time here.
Yes. So would you please give us the wording that Cindy can write down regarding the
South
of the Village
Area? The Planning Commission supports your amendment. Regarding,
so I'll cut to the chase. I'll make the motion that.
I'm just saying that's what you're going to make a motion for.
Right. So I move that we amend the draft zoning regulations to add to the
replace industrial with heavy industrial.
To replace heavy industrial with heavy industrial.
On the list of prohibited
uses in the Village District.
In the South Pomfret Village District. Yeah. Referred to as the Village District. You have to have
thank
it,
you
called, it has to be called the Village District.
Have you got that something?
I suppose.
It's in the letter. It's in the letter. It's
okay.
In the letter.
I've
if you really want to nail it down tight. But the Planning Commission agrees with your amendment. That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you already have it in your minutes.
So we have that, and we need a second for that.
Good.
Okay. All those in favor of that particular item, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Wonderful. Now we go to the
rural.
Third item, which is rural, which was not in Scott's motion.
We respectfully disagree. Okay, so I read that at great length, the amendment that you had on prohibited uses in the rural district. This amendment proposes to replace heavy industrial with industrial not associated with a home-based business. I'll say it again. Replacing heavy industrial with industrial not associated with home-based businesses on a list of prohibited uses in the rural district. By this means that if it's a home-based business, you can have industrial.
Some form of light industrial.
Some form of industrial. Industrial.
Okay.
And we felt that, you know, that can, in the rural district, could be a standalone. We felt that it doesn't necessarily have to have a home-based business scenario surrounding somebody that has a little shop.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they may live a quarter mile away. And so that's what we felt. That we felt that it just didn't make sense in the rural district. This, if you want people to come and move into a community, you've got to allow some sorts of businesses to be taking place. This will be overseen by the standards of ZBA, so it'll be conditioned.
Right, so okay. It's not just you apply, you get
so in other words, yeah, a trap. What kind of traffic will it generate? How many parking lots will it have? Which controls traffic? Alone.
Right.
What are the hours of operation? What kind of noises will be made on and on? So we thought that was sort of fair.
I agree.
Okay, so do we understand the language for that motion?
Yes.
Basically, you're going to strike your amendment, basically. I think that's what
should do. Is it as simple as just making a motion to strike our amendment on that?
I think that's how it works. Does that make it?
Let me hang up here with me for just a moment.
You may want to just put it in writing exactly like we
said. Let me bear with me for just a second.
Yeah. It's complicated stuff.
No, because we did it as a bulk, so I think what we need to do.
I think we need to just have
one
at a time. Have this as a third motion.
Yep.
Do you have that, Cindy?
Yes.
Yeah, proposed.
Can anyone make the motion?
Does someone wish to make that motion?
I would be happy to if I had the wording.
Here you go. Can you make?
What are we doing?
So you want to allow light industrial in the rural district is basically the bottom line.
Basically your motion only have
but we
heavy
have,
industrial and yeah. Prohibited uses in the
world. See, what are you doing here?
So I make a motion that we have only heavy industrials be
prohibited.
A prohibited use in the rural district.
Now you can get in the weeds a tiny bit with industrial versus light industrial. But I'm looking here for definitions, and I think light industrial is what we're talking about.
You could always...
It's industrial.
Without
both of them are industrial.
Stipulating exactly every scenario,
if it's
it's going to be ambiguous.
If heavy industrial is prohibited, it's defined. And that takes care of that.
Right.
Okay, so...
Second. I think if anybody didn't second.
No, nobody seconded it.
So... We've motioned and seconded. Any discussion?
I just want to make a couple of points on this motion. One is that I know that there's been some things said about harmony and consistency, or I'm not sure what the term of art is for, to what extent the zoning regulations need to be in concert with the town plan. I will point out, whether it makes any difference to anybody in this room or not, and Billy will remember this, Nelson will remember it too, we struggled a lot. If you remember 5 years ago.
It's been years of struggle.
We struggled when we came up with the language that is in the town plan right now, you'll remember.
Yep.
We spent a lot of time to come up with what is in the town plan right now.
Yep.
In my recollection, that was probably the hardest, most troublesome part of writing the town plan was as it related to industrial uses. And
right.
Before this meeting, I went back to some of our old email exchanges that we had with Peter Gregory and within the Planning Commission itself, and we really, really struggled. And just as context for everybody in this room, you know, I'm not trying to change anybody's mind, but we started, the starting point when we drafted the town plan was nobody wanted any industrial in Pomfret at all. None. Zero.
We didn't really understand what industrial meant.
We got visions of smokestacks, and I remember some of our conversations.
Now we have definitions.
Yep. And so we had this discussion that, hey, it needs to go somewhere else. And then we said, okay, if it's going to go anywhere, South Pomfret is the
way. Well, it was going to go North Pomfret. We were playing with both places.
That's true. We had our hamlet designations.
Well, bottom line is, recently the state mandates that every town in their town plan has to designate a district that can house industrial.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Remember that, Nelson? And so we went, oh, you're kidding. And so we talked to Kevin. We said, no way.
Yeah.
It's like affordable housing. We'd love to see affordable housing.
Yeah.
But we've talked to people at Twin Pines and on and on. They go, "Are you kidding? That's not where affordable housing goes."
Yeah.
It goes in White River. It goes where the services, where the bus spaces, on and on and on.
Yeah. I guess the two points I would make. And again, this may not amount to a hill of beans, but. One is that, just so we're clear, that we are making a policy decision right now. While we are kind of haggling over whether to revoke changes made in the proposed zoning bylaws, we are in fact making a policy decision right now, whether we want to allow industrial uses in the rural district. And if people are okay with that, that's fine. That should be a town decision, right? That should be... Voters should be informed of that. They should do that with open eyes.
That's what the hearing's for.
Yep, exactly.
Yep,
but
we've had plenty of hearings for it.
I do want to say that we are making a policy decision. And the second point I would make is that for the time being anyway, and this is an open legal question, there is no clear answer on it. But on the question of to what extent the town plan... the zoning regulations need to be is an open question here only because of the language that's used in the town plan. And again, going back to our deliberations over this 5 years ago, we intentionally chose very strong language. And that language in the town plan is commanding language. And so when you say something shall not be located somewhere or shall be located somewhere, that has legal significance.
Right.
And so even though this motion will pass, I'm sure, based upon the tone in the room, we may be in a situation where we have a town plan and zoning regulations that are not in harmony with each other.
We understand that we can make changes, and that's the first thing you do every 8 years. You've got to come up with a new town plan, or at least we adopt it.
Yeah, but again,
those changes we agree.
I just want to say for the record that we are making a policy decision right now, and we are potentially creating a friction between the town plan and the zoning regs. So,
you refreshed my memory some, but given that the town plan is 5 years old and the zoning ordinance is 0 years old,
yeah, sure.
In the time frame of 5 years, things have changed.
Sure.
So they're quite possibly not going to mesh all the time.
Sure, but we won't know until we rewrite the town plan.
And nothing's perfect.
Yeah.
Go look at any map.
So, can I ask Billy a question?
Oh, no, please. Sure.
Well, as the author of the letter,
I
read the letter. I don't have a clear understanding of why you want this change, because you say something.
Which change?
The
industrial and the rural.
In the rural districts, because the town plan is really clear in very strong language that you don't want to do that. And you don't want to have it. And your rationale is that in the letter, well, I know.
Yeah,
but
we understand, because that's why people change plans and change zoning ordinances. And
Okay.
Yeah.
But in the letter, you say the zoning ordinances don't have to completely mirror the town plan. True. But the law says that, and this is from your letter.
Don't believe everything you read.
Mm-hmm.
I said, don't believe everything you read.
Well, I see it. I'm not sure about that. I'm sorry. I'm just not as organized as I could be.
Is this going anywhere?
Okay. Yeah, it is going somewhere. The Pomfret zoning bylaw need not mirror the town plan in all aspects.
Right.
State law only requires conformance. Mm-hmm. Which has been, and that's a quote that's from the state law, which has been interpreted by the Environmental Division as requiring overall, quote, harmony, agreement, or compliance. Mm-hmm. So that's also pretty strong language. And all those words have meaning, and they mean that you need to be in some kind of harmony, agreement, or compliance with your town plan and conformance. Now, I think you're splitting hairs to say, I don't know what this means when it says not duplication. Duplication in this context doesn't mean a whole lot to me. And then when you take that and you say that the town plan is so clear, and not just in one place, it's all over the town plan, that the major goal is to protect the rural character of the rural areas. Now, industrial is really different from rural.
Not necessarily.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
It's not completely. But if you allow and you don't have, here you say.
Industrial always seems to signify metal things being made and gears churning and
all. Well, I know, but
the point is that it is not.
You're not in compliance. These legal terms. You're not in harmony with.
Well, the town plan. The plan is then 5 years old now, and now we're going to change things.
But it's what you got right now. You're doing the zoning based on the town plan that you've got right now, not what you're going to have in a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years.
Well,
it's 7.
You can't stand still, because things change in 5 years.
Okay, so what has changed?
It's not necessarily out of harmony.
But wait a minute. It does not mean that light industrial is not allowed in the rural area, because it is, if it's associated with a dwelling or an accessory dwelling. Mm-hmm. Now, that makes sense. And I think that the distinction...
What's the difference, though?
I think there is a difference. Let me think. The distinction between the two is that... Don't forget that your town plan is talking about maintaining the rural character of the rural districts. A standalone industrial business is a very different tone from one that is associated with a home or you know, or an accessory dwelling.
But you're talking a standalone industrial business that has to go before the zoning board of adjustment. And so it has to meet criteria to protect it from noise, noxious fumes, and all those things that the ZBA has to take into consideration.
Screening.
Okay, but we're talking about no noise here. We were talking about no noise standards here a little bit ago.
This is not in that three years ago. This is not.
I understand that.
This is not a simple permit process where you bring in a permit for a house, and if as long as you satisfy the setbacks, you're good to go. This has to go before the zoning board of adjustment as a conditional use, and that's a totally different matter. There's one other thing. I sit here most of the time and I don't say anything, but this time I have to, and that is that we are all getting old. And young people are not going to come here if they can't do anything but just have a home because they can't afford just that. They have to make a living. And if we want this town to survive, we ought to make some accommodation for people that are willing to come here and work here.
And I couldn't agree more with you if we had the property values in this town that would allow people to come to open, as Billy said, a paint shop or something. We don't have that, to be honest. We don't have that.
Well,
there was one, it says, in Billy's letter, it says, if light industrial uses are entirely prohibited in the rural district, no such uses could ever be considered. And that's just not true. It's not accurate, because there are industrial uses.
It's important.
Permitted.
This is really important.
In the rural district right now, and would be in your zoning, because if it's associated, and in the town plan says it, if it's associated with a dwelling or an accessory dwelling. So I guess my question is, and I'm waiting for somebody to tell me why this change to standalone is so important, because I think it could affect what the town plan is trying to protect, which is the rural character of the town. And I think, and I'm not saying we should not have industrial, I think there's a real danger, because if you've got a conditional use for a standalone industrial business of some sort, once you permit one of those under certain conditions, you have to, but you can't not permit the others. And that's your slippery slope. And then how do you protect the rural nature of the town?
Well, we've always had them. We've had Suicide 6 since skiing was invented.
Yeah, I know, but Suicide 6 is a whole...
No, that's not. That's an industrial use.
All right.
Well, Tego Store used
to be... Okay, are we going to send all the industrial uses to Act 250?
It is now 20 after 9.
Okay.
We've been here
for three hours now.
And unless there's something different that has to come up
then
I think it's time to move on. Nancy?
The only reason I'm standing is I'm right back here. My experience, in fact, I came to the Planning Commission to talk about various things after the last meeting. We didn't finish, actually, but I did suggest something that night that I actually called Three Rivers about, and the main point was what I had suggested was not recommended by the town plan, and and I think this is really true with my experience with land use. The town plan is incredibly important, and for how you establish your regulations. And so I think that if the town plan has a certain recommendation for industrial at this point, until the town plan is changed, which it will be in a few years again, that really we should abide by that, because once you start not abiding by it, then somebody will say, well, you know, if this didn't mean anything to you for this kind of thing, and it'll undermine your ability to manage your growth. The whole point of having a town plan and regulations is that you can manage your growth. There's a difference between allowing everybody to do whatever they want and managing your growth.
And I think we're far from allowing people to do whatever they want. I mean, I would certainly make the argument that we are still in harmonious agreement between the two, because we are, although they may both say slightly different things of allowed uses, we still have a process that one has to go through, a fairly lengthy, complex process that one has to go through to get approved to have such an industrial use in a rural area, because it's a conditional use. And therefore, you can put conditions on that. You know, if John Doe wants to open a one-man wood shop on a piece of property that he doesn't have a house on, if it says prohibited, he cannot do that. Or if it's conditional use, you can make them make that building fit in with the surroundings of the area that's there. You can tell them that they can't build a steel building. It has to be whatever. And so that's still making it harmonious with what's there. It is still fitting into what is here now. And so, although maybe there is slight conflict, I don't see that that's so far out of the box that that is breaking the relationship between those two.
Well, my point is that
If you're going to use words that are so broad, you've got to use words that are to the point that accurately describe it. Don't just say that you can, it's making it so somebody can do whatever they want, because that's not what it is. Talk to the point of what it is. Don't try and make it something that it's not. That's my point. You can't do that. It makes what you are trying to say incredible. If you understand what I'm saying.
Okay, so let me explain a little bit. More.
I mean, you can if you want. I mean, I know how I'm going to vote, so it's not going to make a difference to me. But if it helps somebody else understand your, then that's fine. But I mean, I'm not going to tell you that you can't. But
there is no question that to follow your town plan is incredibly important. And I've been through this. You know, being on a planning commission for 17 years and prior knowledge before that. And I know what happens. So unless you define industrial and think about what the range of industrial might be under this, you know, I'd be a lot more comfortable if you had that discussion first. But it's pretty broad the way it's written. And in your image, you're thinking of maybe a small business. You know, and what you described to me is fine. You know, but in my mind, you know, I picture that there might be a lot of different types of industrial uses that might be proposed at some time that probably, if you thought backwards, oh, that's not really what we meant. And unless you actually take the definition of light industrial and make sure that it is very clear what it means and what it doesn't, you know, what it means, and only that, and it's not vague at all, then it might be fine and still in compliance with the plan of development.
Industrial includes, the definition of industrial includes both light and heavy. And then you go to heavy industrial, which has its own definition, and light industrial, which has its own definition in the bylaws definitions.
So this includes electronic, high-tech manufacturing and assembly. I mean, that could be a huge building.
I guess I just don't understand why have a town plan.
Warehousing.
Those are my two questions. Why bother having a town plan if you're going to deviate? And this is not a small deviation. This is a huge deviation based on the language in the town plan. And then why this particular change? And I would love to get an answer.
I think what they're trying to do, I mean, we have businesses in town that if you want to classify them right now, classify as light industrial. And So, I mean, should we be going through and kicking them all out of town?
But you better say light industrial in your thing, because you don't. And that and
well,
the slippery slope.
It should say light industrial.
Well,
shouldn't say it industrial.
When,
it should say
well,
light.
Somebody who gave the motion.
No, it's prohibited uses, so it's prohibited heavy industrial.
Oh,
heavy industrial.
Well, in the village district? Or
no, in the rural district.
In the rural district.
So. But still, I just, you know, I guess I'm with Nancy, because isn't the point of a town plan that it's your blueprint, it's your roadmap, and then the zoning regulations or the laws?
Well, we're going to change it.
But you haven't changed it. You've got to deal with what you got.
But everything is, what do you change first? The town
plan? Well, you haven't changed the zoning ordinances since 1973.
That's correct.
Okay. And they haven't been updated with current law. They don't coincide with current law. And they haven't for many, many years. The Planning Commission has worked very hard. They work very hard on the town plan. And they work very hard on this. They've been working on it for 3 years or more.
I used to go to Planning Commission.
To be honest.
I know. But
I realize this is simplistic. And I'm sorry about that.
Well, nothing's perfect. Right.
But to be honest, it is time to get a plan that can at least stand up to a challenge. At least it will be concurrent with current law. Nothing is perfect. And indeed, maybe the town plan should be changed to reflect more modern thoughts as well. But in the meanwhile, as a select board, we're tasked with either throwing it out, adopting it with these changes, adopting it as it was first presented, or just doing nothing if that's what we so desire. But I don't think the doing nothing option is acceptable. I think it's time to at least make it legally whatever.
Yeah, but you're not talking. I'm not talking about
that. I personally, because we still have things on the agenda, am going to, if we want to vote on this, we'll vote. And if it wins, fine. And if we don't, we're going to go on. But it's time to either make a decision one way or the other, and then move on to the rest of the items on the agenda. And if we can't make a decision, we'll visit it at the next meeting.
And then there'll be a hearing on the changes, correct?
There's going to have to be a legal hearing, but before I will be interested in calling a legal hearing and spending the money to warn one, we're going to have to at least be in concert with the Planning Commission, who spent all this time in writing it, and the Select Board, who has to adopt it. I don't want to have another hearing and then have a whole mess more changes and have to do a third hearing because it's expensive, or fourth hearing, and time-consuming. And we've already had two. So, John, your amendment, please. Your motion, please.
I've stated it before, but...
That's all right.
Do you have it written down, Cindy? It was...
We're two.
To change it so that
heavy industrial
was prohibited in the rural area.
In the rural district.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So,
did you second that?
Yes.
Yeah. It's been so long ago. Are we ready to vote on this question?
Yes, please.
All those in favor of John's and Frank's motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Opposed.
Fine. We'll go on from there. Are there any other inconsistencies in the... This was it in your letter. Is that correct, Bill?
Yeah. We agreed with one and respectfully asked you to reconsider the other two.
Then we're not going to move on to...
Actually, before we move on, I just want to...
Oh, I'm sorry. We owe you the... We were going to get through these, and we owe you whatever you are going to. And I've forgotten what it is.
Well, we don't need to address it tonight. There's no decision.
Well, we can if you want.
No, it can't be. It can't be. But I just want, for the benefit of the public here, and for all of us, really. And this is not from me, so don't take this as Scott Woodward. This is from our attorney, who the town hired to deal with land use issues, but. He basically, I'll just read you most of it, but he says, it appears that there are at least a few important terms that are missing definitions in the zoning regulations. The following come to mind immediately, and I know you had some discussion earlier, Bill, with Kevin about change of use. Use, driveway, private road. And all prohibited uses should be specifically defined to ensure that the bylaws are clear about those uses that are not allowed. Restaurant use is discussed in the bylaw, i.e. not primary retail, but is not otherwise defined, and recreation or recreational should be defined. So there's some... I guess what I'm saying is that there's maybe some work to do there.
Do you want to forward that on so
sure.
I can ponder it a little bit?
Yep.
I'll move it on to the rest of the... the change of use is in plain English. I don't think that they have a definition, really. That's what Peter said, and then that's what Kevin said, too.
Well, the rule of thumb is that if it's a term of art or something that has unique meaning in the zoning regs, it should be defined. But if it's a common term that right. can be, look it up in the dictionary.
Or just it makes perfect sense.
But we don't need to get into it.
It could be.
Need to get into it right now, but I think there's probably some benefit
it might
in
be.
Putting specifics around prohibited
I
uses.
Agree.
And you'll send that to
yep.
Bill? Excellent. Okay, town meeting preparation for select board. You, John, and you, Frank, are working on the sound system, and maybe Scott?
Yeah, John.
And I'm guessing that you, Frank, are going to get the water turned on for Floyd's birthday party.
I haven't heard anything, but I guess it'll be Norm
it's
and I.
It's my understanding, I guess it's between you and Norm.
Yep.
But I believe there's a birthday party scheduled
29th.
For the 29th for Floyd, and I assume things have to be turned on for them.
Okay, I'll write it.
So you'll make sure everything
yep.
gets turned
yep.
on.
So they'll be ready for that.
When do we wish to set up chairs and stuff?
I don't know, 8 o'clock we usually get together, right?
That's fine with me. If everybody else will just get there and do it then. Or we can do it the day before if you want to get the sound system up. I don't care.
When you get back.
The morning of it should be fun.
Okay. And
so we did last year.
Okay. Town meeting starts at 9. Okay, so is there anything else we've forgotten that we need to address in that regard? That I've forgotten. Anybody? Okay. I will suggest that we let the events in town with inadequate parking slide until the next meeting.
What's it about? Just give me a synopsis.
Quickly, Haydock's up at Skyline have their race every year, which they now are charging for. And there was a complaint that the road was completely blocked. There was no proper parking. And it seems to me that we need to have a discussion and or a letter with them to indicate that this is going to be as large an event as that. They need to address that.
It's on Skyline.
That's correct.
All right.
And there was also another complaint that there was some other activity at a private residence where cars were started, strewn everywhere in the public way on the town highway opposite Ellen's, actually. And we need to get a handle on those kinds of things. I don't know whether we want to just write a blanket letter, but especially, we just can't have cars all over it. If they're going to have a large gathering, they're going to have to deal with parking somewhere.
What are we going to do about those town meeting people?
Well, that's another problem. I guess we'll just have to give them a citation too. Anyway, so but we can, we'll, let's just defer those until the next meeting and we'll figure out what to do with them. So, documenting the two personnel matters. I did with Jim put the review that I filled out in his file and had him sign so that there is documentation that he got that 6-month review.
We didn't do one.
I did a review. I sent it around to you all. I gave you all an opportunity to do a review and gave you all a chance to fill out a form. You did not do that.
But we as a board did not. We voted not to do a review.
Well, rather than have no documentation at all, I put that in the file with his signature to indicate that he had had a 6-month review of a sort, which indicates that he had a discussion with us.
So we need to do more on that, and we probably shouldn't get into it right now.
And we can do more on both of those, and whether you just want a letter or whatever you want, I'll be glad to write those up.
I wrote them up already, and I sent them around to everybody. So
I did not, I'm sorry,
yeah,
I didn't get them.
I shared them with everybody a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't get them either, so maybe you'd share again, and we'll deal with those in the next meeting.
Yeah.
Because I never thought.
Okay, well, I'll send it around again.
Okay, the last thing is reimbursement for necessary work, and please don't run off, Frank, because I'm going to speak to this issue briefly, and I know you did the work, and I know Tayside Services didn't do the work. I know you didn't put it in invoice, and I know that you have put an invoice in now. The problem that I have is not that you didn't do the work. I know you did. I know Eric didn't. None of that. And you are owed the money. The problem I have is that the FEMA documentation that is in the SharePoint indicates that Tayside Services, yes, it's, and I have it right here. It was 4/30/18 that you filed that stuff. And it was Tayside Services on the Starbuck Road subway.
Are you looking at the final one that was submitted to FEMA?
This is the SharePoint one that you had.
Yeah, but that may not be the final one.
It may not be the final one. That being said,
because I don't know what process the one I sent around with my invoice has.
That has you listed on it.
Right. But I can't guarantee which iteration.
Well, this one that I have that I found in SharePoint and found before, which confused me, was 4/30/18. And that has changed.
I wouldn't rely on that. That's not what was.
Well, that's fine, but I have nothing else to rely on because that's what's in SharePoint.
Okay.
So I'm sorry if I misunderstood, but that's what was here. So, that being said, we need to decide as a board to reimburse Frank for this work that he did or to decide something different.
I move that we authorize payment to Frank for this work that he performed.
And the other issue is that you told us specifically that if we hadn't reimbursed, we couldn't ask, if we hadn't paid out the money, we couldn't ask for reimbursement from FEMA. And so where does that leave us? Because we obviously did not do that.
I'm sorry, what are you saying?
You spoke, when we spoke about Roger Amato and his armoring part of that roof, that
yes.
We could not claim that as a FEMA expense if we had not paid out that expense.
Correct.
We've not paid out Frank's expense, and yet we've asked for reimbursement from FEMA.
Well, okay, so what you're asking for is verification that was included in the reimbursement. Is that what you're asking for?
No, I'm saying that we should establish, if we're going to do these things, we should establish a policy that either, if you said in one instance we had to pay that money before we could ask for reimbursement, and in the other instance, we did not pay the money, and we did ask for reimbursement. That's a 180-degree shift on either item. And so, going forward, we need to determine what is indeed the correct procedure and follow that. Because obviously, we did not follow the same procedure in both instances. Because we haven't paid Frank, and yet we did pay reimburse Roger Amato before we got FEMA reimbursement.
I will say, based on my recollection, I actually thought we had paid Frank, and I didn't know we hadn't paid Frank until recently. So if to my knowledge, and I will double check, the submission, but I am pretty sure that was included with Starbuck Road.
It's the first time I've ever seen that bill.
I'm sorry?
It's the first time I've ever seen this bill. It was just recently.
Well, it was in all of our paperwork. So
it might have been in yours, but it never came to me to pay it.
Okay, and that may be true. I don't know, but all I can say, and I will double check, as I'm saying, I will double check that when we submitted to FEMA, that it was included. So actually, I have it right in front of me. So I have the paperwork that was submitted to FEMA. I'm looking at Starbuck Road. Work completed totals, forced account labor, two laborers, 6 hours, 168.31. Forced account overtime, two laborers, 5 hours, 198. Forced account equipment, three each, 11 hours, 617.50. Materials, 2,076.26.45. Contract, 1,680. So yes, it was included. We were reimbursed for it.
And so my question then is, how did you get that figure without an invoice?
We had an invoice. Frank sent an invoice as soon as he completed the work. Great. So when we met with FEMA, did the paperwork, it was a requirement to have an invoice for that work, and so that invoice was included. Now, whether the invoice ever made its way to Ellen, I only handled the FEMA paperwork. I didn't handle the invoice. I assumed all the invoices were getting to you. So if it didn't, that's a mistake. But we did get reimbursed for it.
Well, I think in the future we need to be careful and cognizant that these things are done in the correct way. I personally don't want to be going to jail. I don't think I'd like it. Well,
we're not. We're not. We got reimbursed for the money, so
but we got reimbursed for something we never paid. That's the point. This bill never arrived on my desk. Oh. I have never paid this bill to Frank or to Eric Chase or anyone, and I don't know how we can be entitled to get reimbursed by FEMA for a bill I've never paid.
Well, we did. We got reimbursed. So
I know that. I'm not questioning that. I'm saying we never paid this bill.
I thought we had.
Well, I don't know how you generate the documents you give to FEMA to justify paying a bill when it has never gone through the general ledger for the town of Concord.
I mean, a lot. It's been, what, 3 or 4 years now, but so I can't recall every single detail. But
how do you justify paying a bill when there's no document for it?
There was a document. Well, there was an invoice.
There was never an invoice that came to me.
I know. Okay, so Ellen.
So if you're supposed to be getting reimbursement for the town's expenses, this has not ever been a town's expense.
So when we submitted the paperwork to FEMA, and so I'm just going to tell you recollection of what I recall happened. So if you got to understand, first of all, what Frank did, and I'm not speaking for myself. This is what happened. That was an emergent situation. Frank basically went in there on his own volition and rebuilt that road so that it was passable. It was an emergency situation.
We're not questioning it.
No, I know. Let me say,
you have spoken probably more than any single person in every meeting I've ever come to, and I would just like to make a point. I'm not questioning that the work, that it wasn't urgently done. Okay. I am saying that FEMA is reimbursing us, that we've never paid this bill.
I'm sorry.
I don't understand what documents you're looking at when you're submitting something to FEMA when there is nothing that has gone through the town's bills to pay it. I don't understand how you can do that. And if any other person were to come to me now and hand me a bill that's 2.5 years old, I'd tell them to go pound sand. Why do we owe this bill?
I don't know what to tell you, Ellen. All I can tell you is that when the work was done and we were accumulating costs for each damage site, and we talked it over with FEMA, and we explained the situation with Starbuck Road, we explained what Frank had done in an emergency situation, FEMA said you got to have an invoice.
Yes.
Yes, let me finish, please. I asked Frank, in the midst of all of this, for an invoice. He produced one. It was not my responsibility to get it to you. I assumed it had gotten to you.
Your responsibility is to get documents from me, because you're supposed to be reimbursed. You're supposed to be asking for things that the town has paid. And if you haven't gotten those documents from me, they're not legitimate expenses of the town of Pomfret.
I assumed that it had. I've been trying to say this, Ellen. I assumed that it had.
Assuming is not good enough when you're dealing with the federal government. You're supposed to be getting the documents from me that I paid the bills, it was legitimately documented to me, and it was approved on a warrant, and none of this has happened with this bill.
So, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't know, you know, how it would be voted right now, I don't know how I vote, but to me, what happened was, for better or for worse, there was an oversight of how this was going, of what happened, and yes, the documents didn't come from the right place, but and now it's 3-4 years after the situation, so it's not somewhere that we as a town should have been, nor should we be here currently, but we are. So the problem is this. The bill got submitted to FEMA. FEMA gave us money. We never paid the bill. So what do? What's worse? Keeping money from FEMA and never paying somebody for the work, or paying them for the work that they actually did, that we know we did, but the stuff didn't get done right, and paying them late or never paying them and collecting and basically making money off of FEMA. This is where we're at. Regardless of the way it should have gone down, this is where we are. So what do? We can debate what should have happened, but it happened. How do I feel about it? I don't really know. But this is where we are.
That's an accurate description.
So, there was a motion to pay this bill. Unless I misheard, I haven't heard a second.
And the federal government isn't going to haul any of us off to jail over a $1,600 bill.
And there's no malfeasance.
The point that I am trying to make is that as a board and as a town, we come under scrutiny, and we're supposed to be doing things correctly.
That's right.
Just as Scott came under scrutiny when he went before this audit board or monitor board a week ago, and we haven't gotten the report back. And we should make it our top priority to do things correctly and appropriately. That's all I'm trying to say.
Absolutely.
I know Frank did the work. I know he was down there. I'm not arguing any of that. And if he never got paid, which obviously he didn't, he should be paid. But that being said, I think we have, as a board, an obligation to be more careful in the future so that these things do not occur. Because at some point, rather than only be $1,680, it could be $16,000. And we have to be sure that we are diligent in these responsibilities. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think anybody disagrees with that.
So, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Who made it?
I made it.
All those in favor of paying this bill?
Aye.
Aye.
Steve?
I think it's too far out.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
And you're not going to vote?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
We'll put it on the next thing. That's all we have except for the warrants for payment and approval of the minutes. And I'm willing to let the approval of the minutes go if we can do these warrants.
They were pretty much already done. Scott had...
Have you got these amounts and the numbers?
I do.
Do you want me to read these off for the record?
Yes, you better.
Okay. We have accounts payable of 19083 in the amount of $34,257.87. And then we have a check warrant report 19082 in the amount of $7,200.39. We have a check warrant 19081 in the amount of 1063.25. And
those are done.
These were done, that I just have to sign. Do we have a second?
Second.
All those in favor of paying those second. Bills?
I did, I second.
Okay.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I think we know our assignments. I will get back to Sharon tomorrow morning, and we can come up with a plan. And 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, a site review.
Yep.
At Tivo.
Plug?
Yeah.